If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more. This week's episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Expedition Unknown. Do you know that there's proof that Robin Hood might have been a real person using underground passageways under England to rob the rich? Or that gold coins discovered on the beaches of Florida might be connected to a Spanish treasure fleet that sank in 1715? On the Expedition Unknown podcast from Discovery, Josh Gates travels the world to investigate history's greatest unsolved mysteries. He'll take you through Russia and Germany looking for stolen objects of great value pillaged by Nazis during World War II, to Nepal to uncover mysterious caves high up the mountains, or to Peru to uncover the meaning behind giant geoglyphs drawn into the earth hundreds of years ago. I met Josh and interviewed him on This Week in Travel. Now it's been 12 years ago. Can't believe it's been that long, but that tells you how long he has been out there looking for stories like he's sharing on the Expedition Unknown podcast. Travel the globe with Josh Gates as he investigates some of humanity's greatest feats and most iconic legends. Listen to Expedition Unknown where you get your podcasts. And thanks to Expedition Unknown for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. Amateur Traveler, episode 877. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about bullet trains and beer, fumaroles and hot springs, ropeways and hiking trails as we go to the island of Hokkaido in northern Japan. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Hokkaido. I'd like to welcome the show Inga Aksumit from ingasadventures.com, who's come to talk to us about the northernmost region of Japan, Hokkaido. Inga, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. What's your connection with Hokkaido?
My interest in going to Hokkaido is because I'm a real outdoorsy person and I love to hike. And it seemed like with all the national parks that are located in Hokkaido, that was a natural destination for me and my husband, Steve.
Excellent. And why should someone go to Hokkaido?
The natural beauty is the main reason to go to Hokkaido. The rugged landscapes, the feeling that you're far away from civilization is an experience that you don't find in a lot of other places in the main island of Japan, which is Honshu. Many beautiful places to go down there, but it's a very different landscape in Hokkaido.
What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
I'm going to recommend a 7-day itinerary, which will give the traveler a balanced experience between seeing towns on the island as well as getting out to the rugged natural landscape.
Excellent. Where are we going to start?
I would imagine that most people will arrive in Japan in Tokyo. That's how we arrived. We were extremely jet lagged after the long flight. And I am a person who, no matter how much I do this, I suffer from jet lag terribly. So I like to allow a little bit of decompression time before I start moving around in the country. So I recommend taking a day in Tokyo, if you have it, a couple of days is better. And I understand that you have coverage on Tokyo and upcoming coverage. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about what to do.
Yeah, we've got a couple different episodes on Tokyo that we've done in the past, and we've actually got one that's coming out in the next month. We'll give people lots of information if they have more than a day in Tokyo in terms of what to do. But you suggest...
I suggest that you stay one night in Tokyo, and we decided to stay at a hotel, basically at the Tokyo station. This is one of the largest train stations in Tokyo, one of the busiest train stations in the world. And when we made that decision, I wasn't quite sure that was going to work out. I'd been to Tokyo several times before, but didn't have a sense of what the landscape was around the train station, but we ended up loving it. These train stations are like little cities. You could spend a whole day in the Tokyo train station. It has everything you need. It has retail, shops, restaurants, convenience stores. And so for us, it was very convenient to stay basically at the train station. We were at the Metropolitan Hotel, which is a JR hotel. It is operated by the Japan Rail system.
Oh. Okay.
And so we arrived completely jet lagged, disoriented. We knew we were close to the train station. We didn't quite realize we were at the train station. So we went out and got a cab, and he tried to tell us something. And I'm sure he was trying to tell us that if we just turned around and walked into another entrance, we would be at our hotel. And we just threw up our hands and said, please take us somewhere. So it ended up taking him about 10 minutes of driving to navigate around to the other entrance. And then we did laugh when we got out of the car. So we got a good night's sleep and then went back to the train station to exchange our JR rail pass. So we had purchased a pass on the internet. Mm-hmm. And it is available to tourists, but you have to exchange it in person with your passport and get the ticket that actually gets you on the train. We were going to be in Tokyo for a few days. If you only have a week, I would recommend just going to the JR office, exchange your ticket, and then get a reservation or just walk on the train to go up to Hokkaido. So in my itinerary, I'm going to give travelers a way to do this only using public transportation, ground transportation, and not having to fly. If people want to make it more efficient, you certainly can fly. It might even be a little bit cheaper. But for us, we love trains and the opportunity to travel on the bullet train, the Shinkansen train, was part of our journey. It was part of the experience that we wanted. So the train goes up to the island of Hokkaido. And before I start talking more about the itinerary, I did want to emphasize that it is really easy to travel around Japan. You don't need a tour. You don't need a private driver. You don't need a guide. It's very safe. The stations are all spotlessly clean. It's incredibly efficient. Do not be 1 minute late for your train or it will be gone.
That is true. Okay.
So even if you choose to fly back, I would encourage people to consider taking ground transportation maybe on the way up and then making it more efficient to fly back to Tokyo or wherever they're headed after that. So the Shinkansen tracks are usually in a separate part of whatever train station you're in.
Right.
This would be our second day, would be going up to the island of Hokkaido. So when we were planning, we were trying to figure out how it got over or under the water. Right. It just wasn't very apparent, even from reading multiple sources, how that worked. And so we just decided it was going to work out somehow. Our ticket actually said Hakodate in Hokkaido. So we knew that the ticket got us over there. So we thought when we get there, maybe they transfer to a regular train, or maybe there's a ferry, or you swim, or I don't know what. I noticed that one of the passengers was getting really active and looking out the window at one point towards the end of the journey. And it turns out there's an undersea tunnel, and it only opened, I believe, in 2016. So since that time, you've been able to take the bullet train straight up to the island. Unfortunately, it doesn't go all the way to Sapporo, which was our destination. It goes up to a town on the very end of the island, and then you transfer to a regular train. So we went a very long distance in 4 hours. And then it took us another 4 hours to get to Hokkaido, going a fairly short distance. So we noticed in Sapporo that they were building a train station separate from the regular station for the Shinkansen. And so I looked it up, and it looks like they're estimating around 2030 is when the train will go all the way to Sapporo.
Now, just to clarify, so Tokyo to Hakodate was 4 hours. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because it's a 12-hour drive. I was just looking it up. So you can see why flying might be a good option, but the Shinkansen is quite efficient. Okay.
yeah, it's a great way to experience how people actually travel in Japan. Although a lot of Japanese said, why did you take the train? You could have just flown. But I hear a lot of travelers saying they want to travel like a local. And this truly is how people get around. Thousands of people take the train every single day to go to work. They travel this way to see family. And it's a nice way to see the terrain changing. Yep. I noticed about 2 hours into the train ride going up the main island that you could really feel how the population density was easing up. Sure. More mountains were starting to pop up, or at least little hills first, and then bigger mountains. So I got that sense of excitement I get when I'm getting near wilder areas. I started getting really excited about the hiking that we were going to do. So we did end up taking the train for 8 hours. So that's a long travel day. It's very comfortable. The ride is very smooth. They have snack carts that run up and down the train, and you can buy lunch and snacks before you go. It is a long travel day. So we got to Sapporo and basically just ate dinner and went to bed. The next day, we did spend one full day in Sapporo. And the things that we wanted to do were get outside a little bit. We had been on this train for 8 hours, so we wanted to be able to walk around. And we wanted to go to the Sapporo Brewery.
Okay.
So we found the University Botanical Garden, which was quite near the train station. We stayed about a block away from the train station and walked to the botanical gardens, which was a very lovely stroll, shaded. It was pretty warm that day, but it was a beautiful blue sky day. So it was nice to get out and stretch our legs a little bit. And then within this botanical garden were two museums, and they were very interesting. So one of them was a natural history museum. So we got to see examples of lots of the animals that are native to Hokkaido. And then they also had an indigenous culture museum. So we got an introduction to the Ainu people. And I know there's an article on your website about the Ainu people, the indigenous tribes that inhabited this island before it was taken over by Japan. So that was a really great introduction to that part of Japan where we were going to spend the next few days. By the time we saw the garden and the two museums, it was time to get a little break and go to the brewery. So we ended up walking. It's quite a long walk, but we're big hikers and we enjoy that. You can get a taxi easily, and went over to the Sapporo Brewery. They have tours that you can join, but they also have a really nice self-guided tour that we did. And then a beer tasting, of course.
And this was available in English, or are you fluent in Japanese?
In English. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was great. They had different stations and you walked around from station to station. They were numbered so you could tell where you were going. And then at the beginning of the station would be a little rack with a bunch of cards, oversized cards, and they were all different languages. So you could just pick up the English card, read it, walk along a little way, drop that card, and then move to the next station. So it was really set up very efficiently, which doesn't surprise me because everything's very efficient in Japan. The beer tasting was great if you like beer. And then they also have a really nice restaurant. We had heard good things about it, but we didn't really understand what it was all about. And I'm really glad we went there because they featured a meal. It's a famous dish that originated in Hokkaido. You grill the meat at the table, which is similar to other meals in Japan, other dishes, but it's a little bit different. We had other meals later on where you grilled on a grate with a fire underneath. This features a heated dome. This dish is called the Genghis Khan dish. And it's said that it's because this domed method of cooking resembles the helmet of the warrior. So in Japanese, I think it's pronounced something like Genghis Khan, but it is in reference to Genghis Khan. So the way it works is you order whatever cuts of meat you want, and they bring very thin, tender strips of lamb is what we ordered. And then you can also order vegetables. So they give you a little hunk of lard. You put it on the top of the dome, and it drips down into a rim. And so we arranged the onions and cabbage around this rim, and then we cooked the meat on top of the dome, and it cooks very quickly. But the fat is collecting down in the rim, and that's what flavors and cooks the vegetables. So it was really delicious, and that's what everybody was having around us. So I was really happy to be able to experience a typical meal that was unique to that part of the country. And we never saw that on the menu again in any other part of Japan. So that was fun. And then the other thing that was fun about that is they had a robot waiter. And I'd read about those in tech news, but I'd never actually been to a restaurant that had a robot waiter. So that was very entertaining for a lot of people around us. It didn't seem like it was that common in Japan either. I never saw one at another restaurant, but to see the robots zipping around assisting the regular waiters.
And it's something that you're going to see in Japan before you see it elsewhere because of their population pyramid is all screwed up. They don't have as many people who would be able to do service level jobs. And they have a lot of older people who need service. And so they certainly are experimenting with all sorts of service robots in their economy.
Yeah, it was great to see. Because we have some challenges too with sometimes trying to find help in our country. Yeah, that was fun. So we stayed overnight, but for the 7-day itinerary, I would recommend taking the train to the next town because it'll just make things a little more efficient and get people up into the more remote areas of the country that they probably are there to see. I would head back to the train station and take the train to the next town, which would be Asahikawa. Okay. Asahikawa is a small town. There's trains that go all through the day and evening up until 10 or 11 at night. There's trains that go different speeds. So when you look up the amount of time it might take, it'll depend on the train that you choose. But it could be an hour and a half to 3 hours, depending on the schedule. I would just head up and spend the night there and then take the bus to Asahidake, which is inside the national park. And this is one of the areas that's accessible easily by the train and bus combination. If you choose to stay in Sapporo that next night, you can also take the train in the morning. It's just a little tricky to line up with the bus if you want to try to take the train and the bus on the same day. There's only 4 bus times from Asahikawa, and those are at 7, 9, 1, and 3. So if you get up late and take the long train, you might miss the 3 p.m. bus. So either way, it works out. But if you want to head straight up to the mountain, I would travel on that Sapporo day, get up to Asahikawa. It's a pleasant town to walk around in, but there's not a lot of tourist activities to do there.
We're pretty far north in Japan, and we're also then going up into the mountains, and all the pictures I'm seeing have snow. What time of year were you there?
Really good point. This is a summer venture, unless you want to go skiing. So it's either a summer or winter. But if you want to go hiking, think about how you would plan to go to the Sierra or the Rockies or maybe even Alaska. The latitude of this region of Hokkaido is similar to southern Oregon. Okay. However, they are heavily influenced by Siberian weather patterns. So there's some aspects of their weather that are more similar to Alaska. They have permafrost, they get a lot of snow, and they get these blasting cold winds. Okay. So we were there at the end of September, beginning of October, and that was probably about the last week for comfortable summer hiking. The next week or 10 days later after we had left, they got their first snow, their first significant snow. So the area that we're heading also has cross-country skiing. So it's a big winter sports area. That also would be a really fun destination, but not for hiking.
Got it.
In Asahikawa, everything's so terribly well coordinated. When we came out of the train station, we wanted to check out where the bus stop was going to be for the next day. And we walked out and there's the bus terminal right there in front of the station. It's just not complicated at all. The directions that we got from the hotel we were going to stay in on the mountain told us to go look for the Lawson's convenience store. And I wasn't familiar with Lawson's, but it's a very common convenience store like our 7-Eleven.
Okay.
So there's Lawson stores everywhere. So we spotted the Lawsons. We went over there. They had an ATM. Next to the Lawsons was the ticket office for the bus, but you can also buy tickets on the bus itself from the bus driver. So once we got that all figured out, we checked into our hotel, which was at the train station, because we found that we really enjoyed the convenience of that. So we stayed in another JR Inn property. And they were able to provide us with more information about the bus and all the different times and all that.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by ButcherBox. The best meals start with the best ingredients, and ButcherBox has high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. They have 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping always. If you're looking for inspiration what to do with a fine cut of meat, they provide recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks. I think it's time for me personally to up my game on what I can do with a good steak. But email me and I'll send you my port wine reduction and blue cheese sauce recipe that is to die for. That'll go well with your first order. ButcherBox is giving our listeners free ground beef for life for your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order. Use my link, butcherbox.com/traveler, and use code TRAVELER to get free ground beef for life, plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/traveler and code TRAVELER. And thanks to ButcherBox for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
One of the things we loved about this hotel, which I saw in a bunch of other places on the main island, was the pillow bar. Right next to the check-in counter was this little skinny room with all these slots, and they have a dozen different kinds of pillows. And so if you don't like the pillow in your room, it's such a fantastic idea. So they have a little diagram of how firm it is and what it's stuffed with, and they have feathers, and they have all kinds of things.
That's a great idea.
So I was like, this is genius. It's just funny, the side things you find that make travel really fun. So from Asahikawa to Asahidake is about a 90-minute bus ride. We took the bus in the morning and were able to explore a little bit in the afternoon. So I did want to mention that the bus picked us up at the train station, but then the next stop was at the airport. So they actually have an airport in Asahikawa. And so it would be very convenient if you wanted to fly from Tokyo straight there and get into the outdoor activities as quickly as possible, if that's your goal. Then you would only have the 90-minute bus ride to Asahidake. I have to make sure I get those names right because they're so similar.
Right.
So this town is a little village. It's not even a town. It doesn't have any services. It just has hotels and a ropeway, which is their name for a cable car or a tram. So there's two of these fairly close to each other within a day's walk. And so the only services that are available are ones associated with the ropeway and lodging. If you need to bring cash, if you need to have everything you need with you, you won't be able to buy much of anything there. So we stayed at a traditional onsen. So one thing I learned on this trip was the different ways that onsen is used. So your travelers who have been to Japan may know this, but I had to figure it out because onsen means hot springs.
Right.
So the Asahidake is also an onsen, but it's an onsen town. So they built a little village around the concept of the hot springs. So we stayed in an onsen hotel in an onsen town. Okay. And then one of our hikes went to an onsen, which was just a natural hot springs. There was nothing built around it. It was okay. Just a hole in the earth where the water was warm. So three different ways to use that concept. We stayed in a hotel. It was called the Daisetsuzan Shirakaba So Ryokan. So Daisetsuzan is the name of the national park we went to. There's right. actually seven national parks in Hokkaido. This is the largest one. It has the largest mountain, which goes to over 7,000 feet. Not terribly high compared to what we're used to in California or the Rockies, but still pretty high for Japan. There are a number of different price points, and you can make your choices about where you want to stay based on that. But we stayed in a traditional onsen, so they had Western and traditional rooms. So we decided to go for the traditional room and did find that the futon mats are pretty firm.
Very firm. And you're sleeping pretty much on the floor.
Pretty much on the floor.
Yep.
And so our room was set up for four people, but we were only two. So we had the benefit of stacking two of the futons on top of each other. And it was still pretty firm. And they did have the traditional onsen hot springs bathing facilities.
Yep.
And that's all they had for bathing. So there was a communal bathroom with a toilet and a sink. And then for showering, you needed to go down to the communal baths. So that was really fun. This was my first time to use an onsen. So luckily they had a diagram in the room so we could study up on proper etiquette for going into the onsen. And that was really helpful. And I was always also grateful that around 4 o'clock when we were finished with our first hike, that I was the only one there so I could stumble around and figure things out. Before I had to embarrass myself in front of other people, I did figure out where to put my belongings, to remove my clothing, to shower before I got into the pool. And this was a really beautiful setup. They had an indoor pool. It was quite chilly out by the end of the day, and it was raining a little bit by then. And then they also had a wonderful outdoor area that was natural lava rocks, which were very pointy on my bare skin when I tried to sit down. The water was so scalding hot. I really couldn't stand to be in there longer than a few minutes, but I really enjoyed the experience. The other aspect to our onsen hotel was they had a restaurant for breakfast and dinner, but we couldn't order from a menu. It was just a set meal.
Sure.
And the times were very exact. So it was meals were served at 6 p.m. and 7 a.m., not on demand. So if you wanted your meal, you better show up at that time. And it was our first meal with all the wonderful plates, all the little yep. dishes. And so we were quite charmed by the offering and plenty of food, delicious. And they always had at least one kind of oddly American thing. Or maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I did see a lot of pasta salad and potato salad, but they always had something that struck me as being Western. And then the rest of it was traditional Japanese and then always white rice. So anybody can find anything to eat. And that we liked our hotel that had a nice mix of ages. So there was the very young to quite elderly and also a mix of nationalities. So quite a few Japanese, a few Europeans, and then a couple of Americans. So the hiking that we did in this area, we did three hikes, and there's a lot more that you can do. But for the time we had and the weather, it was already getting a little bit rainy. Mm-hmm. So one of them was up at the top of the ropeway. It's called the Sugatami Loop, and it's the one that pretty much everybody does when they first get there. And it is stunningly gorgeous. So I highly recommend, like everybody else, just starting with that loop. It's only about a mile, although there are extensions to do a little bit more. But it took us an hour to do this 1 mile and it could easily take longer because everywhere you turn is just this amazing scene. when we got off the ropeway, we were still a little bit below a rise. So we could see the top of the mountain and it looked very inviting. And we could see these little puffs of smoke, but we didn't have a good view of what was happening. And then as we got higher, you could see that there were multiple fumaroles where steam was rising from the earth. Mm-hmm. And there were these gorgeous ponds being held by the volcanic rock. And so it was just this magical, otherworldly scene where I felt like I was on another planet, of this landscape spreading out with all these little puffs of smoke coming out. You could hear the steam hissing as you got closer to them. And there was a slight sulfurous smell. It wasn't overpowering, but lots of these ponds and then the huge mountain rising in the background. It was just gorgeous. It's a nice loop. It's an easy trek. And then we hiked up the mountain a bit. It's pretty steep and rocky. And then the weather started closing in on us. We didn't quite make it all the way to the top, but we got a little bit longer hike than just doing the mile around that loop. We came down and it rained all night and we were concerned. The weather report had been shifting and changing and we knew that it might rain the next day. Luckily, it didn't look too bad in the morning, but it was a little bit threatening. So we had noticed a nature trail right outside of our hotel across the street. And I can't find anything about it. It didn't seem, there's probably a sign in Japanese, but I couldn't find anything other than just calling it the nature trail. But it was a little bit more than 3 miles. And it had boardwalks. It was really well developed. So it may be used more in the winter for cross-country expeditions or snowshoeing. But it was really pretty. It was down in the lower part, which is more like temperate rainforest and less like the barren rock that is featured in the upper reaches of the mountain. So it was really pleasant to walk around. The boardwalk went over some marshy areas. And then by the time we finished that, the weather looked improved. So we went up the ropeway again and hiked to the Nakodate Onsen. And that's the name of this natural hot springs that I described earlier. So that was a 6-mile hike. So we ended up hiking a little bit more than 9 miles that day, which was good exercise. So to get to the Nakodate Onsen, there's a couple of different ways. When we got up to the top of the ropeway, we got on the loop trail and then turned left, and it traversed across the landscape. And it was really beautiful because you're circling around this mountain. So you're seeing different views as you progress that you couldn't see before. So ever changing. I kept seeing more valleys. It kept beckoning me to go further. And we did learn that on this trail, you could hike to the other onsen village that has a ropeway. And okay. It would take all day and you can get luggage transfer. So if we had known about that, we would have tried to do that. My husband and I, our style of travel is more to get a rough outline and then not plan things too much. And the downside of this is that you discover things that you would have done that required some advanced planning. So that would be a really nice all-day hike. And there also is a Daisetsuzan Grand Traverse that people do over 5 to 8 days. So for the through hikers in your listener group, there is an opportunity to do a full week of hiking in this mountain range. So there's some great opportunities for hiking.
Okay.
So for the rest of this 7-day itinerary, the next 2 days would involve getting back to Tokyo. So what we did was take the bus back to Asahikawa, and then we took the train, not back to Sapporo, but all the way back to Hakodate, which was the end of the line for the Shinkansen train. So for us, it would be the beginning of the line getting back to Tokyo. And again, people could elect to spend another day on the mountain and fly back to Tokyo. I also want to mention that if you want to rent a car, that does provide more opportunities for traveling to different areas of this national park and for the other national parks. And you do need an international driver's license if you want to rent a car in Japan. And one of the things I found was that in the guidebooks and blog posts and everything around going to the national parks is that everybody recommended that getting a car, and that's the easiest way to see things. And then they wouldn't give you any information about how to do it without a car. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to emphasize how it is possible to do this sure. and get to the mountain. So you could say that either it limits where you can go, but I actually prefer to think about it as it simplified our choices, because it was overwhelming looking at all the different villages and just figuring out, is there a main place to go, or what is the best way to tackle a first time visit to this area? So for us, it ended up simplifying things because this was the most straightforward way to get to the mountain.
And I have driven in Japan. One thing to remember is that they do drive on the left. I have found them, in my limited experience, to be polite drivers, as you would expect. We'll talk about my driving experience coming up on the Tokyo show, because I've only driven a go-kart through the main streets of Tokyo, which is a different experience, dressed like Batman, of course. But that's just something that people need to be aware of. One is, it when you're up in Hokkaido, you don't have to dress like Batman, and we'll have a real car, but you will have to drive on the left.
Yeah, and that can be intimidating for people.
Right.
I would say one thing, though, that's good about Hokkaido is that it's not nearly as crowded, of course,
right,
as
sure.
other yeah. areas of Japan. So it'd be a much more comfortable experience. So in terms of other places to visit in Hokkaido, I would love to spend a month there and go to all of the national parks. You can get up to the very far northern part of the island. You can get way out to the eastern part, where you're looking at islands that I believe are actually Russian. And so there's a lot more you can do in Hokkaido than just the area that we were able to see.
Got it. Anything else we want to cover on your itinerary before we get to some of our wrap-up questions?
This probably was mentioned in some of your other podcasts, but one of the joys of traveling in Japan is that the food is amazing everywhere. And so we found that in Hokkaido as well as the mainland, Honshu, the main island. And you don't have to make reservations at fancy restaurants. Just stop at any little place and the food is going to be amazing.
Excellent. As we get to our wrap-up questions, you're standing in the prettiest spot you saw in Hokkaido. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I'm standing on that Sugatami Loop
okay.
scene. That just replays in my mind every time I think about Hokkaido. And we went up several times on the ropeway. We approached it from several angles, and every time it took my breath away. And even on the turning around from that amazing scene was a scene that you just don't see a lot in Japan, which was a feeling that you were a million miles from anywhere. There's no big towns around there. You couldn't see roads. It just felt like you were out in the wilderness. And that's a really special experience, especially in a very densely populated area like Japan.
One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Japan.
I don't know. That pillow bar was pretty crazy.
Pillow bar is a pretty cool idea. As someone who needs his, you know, under pillow, over pillow between the legs, you need a combination of styles of pillows. So.
You do.
You just have to make do at most hotels.
Yeah. Some of the hotels are really small, and so we yeah. just have to laugh sometimes. They were all like so wonderful. The restaurants were amazing. The people were so kind. And then we get into the room, and we're not big people, but it was one person at a time could get into their suitcase sure. and move around. So they made us laugh a few times.
I've definitely been in a hotel room in Tokyo where you could be on the bed, one bed in the room. It's up against one wall, and you could reach all the other walls from the bed.
Exactly. There was one room that we called our tent, because it was only slightly larger than a tent we would yep. be backpacking in.
It was plenty large enough for me. It had a clothes pressing machine, which was one of the only places I've seen this, which was a vertical
yes.
machine that you could put your clothes in and press them. Which was
I kept wonderful. Seeing that outside of, there would be one communal one outside of the elevator.
Yeah.
And so I went over one time, what is this for? It's like making a grilled cheese sandwich or something for your pants.
The room that I was in, you wouldn't have had room to set up, even if they'd had a ironing board and an iron.
No.
It just wasn't the floor space for it. So this was an ingenious way to do that.
Yes.
If you were, you know, there with clothes that you needed pressing for your business meeting or something. But.
Correct. Yeah. The elevator lobby is the only room big enough.
Yeah. And if you had to summarize the island of Hokkaido in just three words, what three words would you use?
Natural beauty. I only need two.
Okay. Then you got a spare word. If you come back on the show, you get four words.
Okay, that's, excellent. That's I'm going to remember works. That.
You can bank that. Remind me if you come back on the show. Excellent. Our guest again has been Inga Aksumit from ingasadventures.com. And Inga, if we want to send people to your best post on Hokkaido, I'm going to say, what should we send them to? Where will it be?
It will be in the travel section on my website. I have a section for outdoor articles and travel. And actually, there'll probably be some on both. But look on the travel section. And I haven't started writing those up. Hopefully, I'll have my first one up by the time this airs. And then over the next couple of months, I'll be writing up more of my travel adventures in Japan.
But Inga's going to send us the one that she writes on Hokkaido when it is finished, and we'll put it in the show notes so that you can more easily find it.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Japan and for the island of Hokkaido.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope to be back sometime.
You know, you've got that extra question.
I got to use my extra word.
You got to use that.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club. A daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Thanks as always to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you're interested in learning more about becoming a patron, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. Some news on the Morocco trip. We did not get enough people for the second trip, but we had some cancellations on the first trip, so we're going to try and combine the two, but that probably does mean that the trip is full. And so if you want to be on the waiting list, you can contact me. But other than that, we're probably ready to go with the people we have who are going with me to Morocco in April. And thanks. I'm looking forward to it. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. Or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.